Limbert. So we left you in Scarborough, getting your road named after you, but then we find you on Channel 4 presenting a programme for the Open College. Now, the clip we've managed to find is a bit mangled. It's been sort of pre-edited and all sorts of jump cuts, but let's have a quick look at this.
ITV Channel 3, by the way.
ITV Channel 3. Produced by Channel 4.
And if you're thinking, well, I'm not an Open College learner, stick around.
She told him on an Open Learning course she'd been directed.
So,
for Open College learners, what's your particular message for them?
I think this. It's a new chance. It's a chance which previous generations didn't have. Please try.
Right. So, was it the first programme and you're interviewing Margaret Thatcher? What was she like to interview?
Very easy to interview. You ask one question and then she spoke for 20 minutes. it was a doddle, really.
And what was the Open College?
Well, the Open College, people will know the Open University. So the Open College was to vocational learning what the Open College is to academic learning. I think that's the easiest way to explain it, really.
I think it's a passed most of us by. Did it die a death fairly quickly?
I think it did. I'm not quite sure how quickly it died a death, to be honest. I did two series of 10 live, or 20 actually, can't remember now, live magazine programs for the Open College. I remember it being around for a number of years after that, but it probably didn't last a decade.
Mm. Yeah, but your main work now is in the whole area of diversity and inclusion, and you're the director of the Center for Inclusive Leadership. So what's the issue and that you want the community, industry, charities to face, and what's your vision?
Well, I think our vision can be described in very few words, really. Our vision is of an inclusive society. Period. That's the vision. That's why we are in business. We have a mission to create inclusive environments in which people can be their best self and do their best work. So that's what we do when we interact with organizations, and we have clients in virtually every sector. We're working in the financial services industry, we're working in higher education, we're working in retail, we're working in the health sector. So we're working right across the piece, really.
And when you're sort of working with a group, I mean, what are you wanting them to take away? What difference do you want to see happening?
Well, like all good consultancies, the starting point is really related to what it is that they think they want to achieve. So for most of the people that we're working with, it's helping them to understand that their approach to getting better at equal opportunity or diversity, by which they generally mean making sure that people aren't discriminated against, or making sure that they have more different people in their organisations.
Are you talking about the leadership of these organisations, or are you just talking about the sort of frontline troops?
Essentially, we're talking about the leadership, and our day-to-day work is with the groups that I call the top of the middle. We're not necessarily talking about board directors, because we are working with major global banks and huge retailers and so on, but we are talking about regional managers and senior people, and we would be running learning programs or doing executive coaching of them. And the focus for us is to help people understand that the point is to have people feel included, not just to have more people who are different. And just because I'm not being discriminated against doesn't mean to say I feel included. And I think that for a lot of organizations, that a rather sharp distinction comes quite strongly when they get it, because they understand it instinctively, that the lack of discrimination does not mean to say that you have an inclusive workforce. And the fact that you might have a very diverse group of people does not mean that those people feel safe, secure, and, you know, equal to the others in the group.
Do you find that your clients genuinely want their organizations to change, or are they just doing this because that's really what they ought to be doing?
Well, there's always a mixture. I think that our clients genuinely want their organizations to perform better, and our special approach actually is to help them understand that if they get this right, they will increase productivity, they will increase performance, and certainly in the private sector, they will increase profit, because it's very, very straightforward. If people feel included, if people feel part of what's going on, and we even use the word loved from time to time, they're likely to give more. They're likely to perform better. They're likely to be more concerned about each other. They're likely to be concerned about the organization, and so on. How you do that is what we help them to focus on.
Very basic question. Why is diversity a good thing? I remember reading some study, I think, about church in India, and the biggest churches, the churches that were growing, were the ones that just stuck to a single caste and class, and they were happy and they grew. When they tried to blend and include everybody, it was a less attractive option. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it depends where you start from, you see. I think that if people start from the place that says diversity is a good thing and we want more of it, then we need to help them understand that it's about inclusion, right? You don't get value from diversity and difference if people don't feel included. You just get a lot of people who don't feel included or generally get on each other's nerves, okay? And that's very straightforward and that's very obvious. Just think Christmas with your family. It's very problematic, I think. There is something to be said for people who are single, focused, who are all very similar to one another, and you can get quite a long way with that. However, this idea of groupthink, if I've got a lot of people who are like me, splendid though it might be for a while, we're not going to actually be very creative, because we're all going to come at it, whatever it is, from the same perspective. We're all going to have the same way of doing things. We're all going to look at it in the same way. Now, it might make for very short meetings, and it might mean that you can make some progress along the way, but you're unlikely to do anything very special. You're unlikely to break out. That's where diversity and difference comes in, because you need those different points of views, those different ways of working. Now, when you have that, you also have quite a challenging group to manage, and that's why we talk about how do you manage inclusion, because firstly, people need to feel that they're included. They need to feel that they're part and parcel of what's going on. They need to feel that the very weird thing that they're about to say is likely to matter, and that they're not, even if people don't want to go that route, they need to feel that they are not being personally pushed to one side. It's just that people thought that's not a great idea, right? But if you've got a good idea and you're a bit on the fringe of things, you're not going to risk sharing that idea, because that risks you being even further on the fringe. So the starting point has got to be inclusion. So you don't get value from difference if people don't feel included. that make sense?
Yeah. Can we bring it round to the church? You've written a book about how to build multi-ethnic church. What does your thinking and what you're teaching mean for churches? Because I think you go to virtually, I hope, every church in this country, and they'll tell you, we welcome everybody.
Yes.
But they're pretty well monochrome.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's... This is a whole other 3 hours, isn't it, really? I think that... And this is not just this church or any church, it's also my church. Part of the challenge is that people go into a church when they have a sense that it might be like or look like or be reflective of who they are. So going back to your big churches look have lots of people who look the same, that's part of that reason. So if you're going to actively seek to have difference inside, you have to proactively seek that. It doesn't happen just because you've got a diverse community outside. Yeah, so you have to work at that. The other thing is that I don't know about you, but in my church, we're really good at welcoming people for the first kind of two or three meetings when they come in, and then of course some other new people come in. And so the attention shifts a bit. It's sustaining that engagement with new people over a period so that they begin to understand what's going on. That becomes quite important for me, I think, in the church environment. And the other thing, and this is a particular challenge for an organization, a church like the Salvation Army, is to make sure that you work from the basis of having people feel that they belong, first and foremost, then help them to believe, and then they might behave in a particular way. Sadly, lots of churches I know have that bottom up, so that you're not really included unless you behave. And by the way, you need to believe this, and then you can belong. And I think that we need to literally turn that on its head. And that this sense of unconditional belonging, we believe in the unconditional love of Christ, but we don't always express that unconditional sense of, yes, you can belong unconditionally, even if you're behaving in a way that we wouldn't necessarily subscribe to. And that can be problematic, especially in an organization like the Salvation Army, where people might have an emblem that says the Salvation Army, and then they're behaving in a way that is not conducive with that. But so there's a big challenge there. Yeah. But unless people feel that they belong unconditionally, then what's the church for?
When we were talking earlier, you were coming up with the metaphor of dance, really. Oh, yes. And people,
yes, this idea that equal opportunity is really about people not being discriminated against. So in the context of a dance, that's so equal opportunity is being invited to the dance. Diversity is about being invited to dance, so that you've got, especially if you're doing a jig or something, so you've got more different people in the dance. But inclusion is feeling able yourself to go and ask somebody to dance, or feeling able and sufficiently safe to just dance on your own. That's real inclusion.
What does Jesus teach about inclusion that you've taken on board?
Gosh, all sorts of things, really. I think the when I was reflecting on this earlier on today, it seemed the first thing that came to mind was Jesus talking about suffer the children to come unto me, because I think often we see children as being the future of the church as opposed to the present church, and so this sense of being, they are included as part of the church. pleased to see that, you know, there's a space where children can be included now, whereas 10 years ago perhaps, or perhaps even longer in some churches, you know, the inclusion of children was on the basis of the cry room. Do you remember cry rooms? Where, you know, where mothers, generally mothers, could take their children so that they didn't disturb the service. Well, you know, disturbing the service is part and parcel, it seems to me, of what what Jesus was teaching, you know? Hallelujah. You know, so that, that sense of inclusion of children. The all sorts of examples. The Good Samaritan story is powerful, clearly, because, and I think sometimes we don't look at that sufficiently closely. We think of the Good Samaritan as people, you know, a person who was good doing good to another, but it was a person who was an outcast. Yeah, that was the whole point. You know, the Samaritans were the outcast, the completely excluded, who was engaged in being inclusive with somebody else and going literally that extra mile. When Jesus talked about you know, the idea of us not excluding people because of what they might be eating or drinking, even though we ourselves might be focused on a particular diet. You know, my son's just gone vegan. You know, he's a Salvation Army officer. I hope he's not going to say that all his congregation now need to go vegan. You know, but it's recognizing that we can be our authentic self and also allowing and enabling others to be their authentic self. Because we are one in Christ, but we're not the same one in Christ. And I think that that's really important.
Moving on, a few years ago, the value of your work got recognized at the highest level. Let's have a look at this.
Lynbert Spencer for services to the voluntary sector.
I think one of the most important aspects of an investiture is to be able to reward in a suitable way the selfless service and dedication of so many of these remarkable people. People who've dedicated their lives in all sorts of unseen areas. I'm aware, only too aware, that for the vast majority of people who come to investiture, it is a very important moment in their lives when they've been given an honour and a reward and a thank you for all the marvellous things they've done. The great thing, I believe anyway, is to try and have a word with each one, try to make them feel special.
For one horrible moment, I thought he was taking your OBE off you. But no. What was it like to be part of that ceremony?
It was amazing, really. It's although, because I'd worked with the Prince of Wales and on the Prince's Trust and various things, going to the palace was not so new.
Probably need to swap. I think you're crackling
Am
again.
Am I crackling again?
Shall we use this one?
But at the same time, the actual ceremony itself was, apart from anything else, quite a stunning bit of organisation. You know, logistically quite complicated, but it was amazing just to see the art and the pageantry of what was going on at the palace.
What did it mean to your family?
Oh, the family loved it. They enjoyed their day out, they got to be in Buckingham Palace, and the toilets are great. You know?
yeah. Back to your talking about your Christian faith. Has your faith ever sort of wobbled hugely? Have you ever been tempted to turn your back on Jesus, or has it just been a steady walk?
No, gosh. I mean, it's I'm not sure whether it's a steady walk for anybody, really. There's been all sorts of wobbles. There was a time when, before we left Harlesden, we didn't suddenly decide, oh, Scarborough sounds like a good gig, let's go do that. We left Harlesden because we felt excluded. And in a very real sense, people in the Salvation Army were not hearing what we were saying about the extent to which our church were not being relevant or open to the local community. Harlesden was changing, you know, in the early 70s, it was a very different place from the 60s in terms of migration and the different ways of working. You know, we lived through the 60s. You know, it was a very different place. And yet the Salvation Army, my church, was still operating as though it was in the mid-50s. I was a young leader in the church. You know, there was little scope for being heard. And so when it came to thinking about work, we began to look elsewhere for the first time, really, because it didn't occur to us that we should be living and worshipping anywhere else. But once, and this I think was quite a significant piece of understanding, once the anchor of the church became less of an anchor, why we didn't need to be there. We could be anywhere. And so, again, you know, prayerfully and thoughtfully and thinking it through, we were very clear that, you know, the church was the church, but the anchor was Christ. So there's a really good chance he was going to be wherever we went, we thought. So we just looked around elsewhere, and hence the opportunity to move to Scarborough. And interestingly, just I know we're out of time, but some 20 years later, one of the senior leaders of that day confessed that we were right, and they wished that they had listened. But, you know, there we go.
Is there one particular thing or two particular things about what you understand of Jesus that keeps you following him?
I think it's about the his unconditional love. You know, because that is just so powerful. It's a love that is for me all the time, every time, in any situation, irrespective of what I might be doing or saying, or who I might be being. And my understanding is that that is also available for everybody, and that's for me powerful, and that anchors me. Keeps me going for most of the time, and keeps me focused on the work that I do, because that's what it's rooted in.
Thank you very much. Nearly come to an end. I'm conscious that for many of you here, you are sacrificing Strictly Come Dancing results show tonight. But so here is something to soften the blow for you. Well, ballroom dancing your thing?
Yes, we did ballroom dancing for a number of years until the hips gave out. that particular clip, and I'm never quite sure who took that or where it came from, but it was our 60th birthday celebration. And we love ballroom dancing, and we managed to get a they have medals in ballroom dancing, if anybody does that. And we did the lowest medal. We got a bronze. We did our bronze, which was terrifying. Even if we were still dancing, we would not have gone for the silver. It's all about fun rather than having to perform in front of a judge, which I would not recommend, especially now that I watch Strictly. You know, that's just too terrifying.
And who's going to win Strictly then?
Well, I don't know. I would like my mate from the murder thing. What's his name? Who was in the what? Louder. Can't remember. He's got a double-barreled name, I think. Yeah, you know the one.
Danny John Jules,
yes. Not because he's black, but because he's old.
And on that subject, you're 70. Have you got any thought of retiring?
No, not really. I mean, I understand why people retire. They retire from doing what they've had to do in order to earn a living, in order to do something that they'd love to do. I've been very fortunate in my life. I've been able to earn a sort of a living doing things that I love to do. So retirement is a non-concept.
And you think, yes, of your health's going to hold out?
Well, my health might hold out. Certainly the genes are looking good. My mother was 106 a month ago, and I spoke to her last night, and she's still going strong. I keep asking her when I'm going to get my inheritance, but there's no early sign of that yet. She's doing well. So I suspect I could be on the planet for a few more years.
So another 30 years working, yes.
Now you put it that way.
That moment we're going to stop. Thank you ever so much, Limbert. We've loved hearing you, and thank you for coming.
Pleasure.
Limbert's got to go in about 10 minutes or so, but do grab him and have a chat before then. Okay, thank you.